great timing because, you know, Rick came out and visited my farm a few weeks ago, and he talked about soil and building the soil. And so he talked about the weeds and different plants I had in my garden. And so then all of a sudden, the soil foundation lecture was meeting that we had. And so I got to listen to the whole soil foundation talk, and then I went and did it. I actually had some biocharcoal, and so I went and spread out IMO around my citrus trees, and I spread the biocharcoal, and then I also used the mixture of the different trace liquids and watered everything, and within 3 days I had a big difference. So I actually had about 5 or 6 of my citrus trees had aphid infestations going, and I, you know, I was out there squeezing the aphids and, you know, trying to clean them off, spray them off, and I said, no, this is not what I want to do. I want to actually help the tree fight off these guys. And so what I did is I did the IMO treatment, and 3 days later, all the aphid infections were gone. Totally, completely gone. And, yeah.
Is that a foliar feed that you did, or did you just ground
it? No, what I did is spread the IMO in the ground,
okay,
in the charcoal, beyond the drip line, and then just did the watering. And all the plants also looked really much stronger than they did before. So they were all like, you know, we're strong now. Stand up for ourselves.
Did you make the IMO or did you buy it?
I bought the IMO. I'm still, that's the next step, making it. So. Yeah.
Did you cover the IMO that you placed around the base of the tree?
No, what I did is I applied it. I had, actually, I did I was told by someone else here to actually just put the IMO right in the grass, right into the foliage, and you know, that, and do it in the morning. So I did it early morning, and he said that, you know, the IMO will fight the weeds. And actually, what one of the things that happened was that after I started coming back, after I applied the IMO, the weeds became the California grass, and the nasty grasses actually became easier to pull out. The soil was much softer, so the weeds started coming out very easily, the ones that I wanted to get out. Yeah?
So other than the IMO and the charcoal, what else did you put down around the tree?
Well, it was the liquids. The I applied the OHM and fermented fruit juice, and I've made my own IMO. I made IMO 1 about 3 years ago, so I had about half a bottle of IMO 1, which was like the liquid form, so it was very strong, very. And so I used that, and then I used the different ingredients. Some of those ingredients I made like 3 years ago, and some of them were just from bottles of that supplement. Thank you.
Cool, thank you. Kaika wanted to talk about her chickens and how that's been going.
Well, Ashley had a few other things.
Well,
this was just an article that came past my way. It's called, Shit Happens, Mysterious Manure Foam Causes Pig Farms to Explode. Has anybody heard of this? So it is said that nature abhors a vacuum. Well, according to this report from the Minnesota Daily, nature also abhors factory farms. Large Midwestern hog farms have, for the last few years, been battling a mysterious foam that is forming on top of their barn. In the worst-case scenario, the foam blocks ventilation ducts, and the barn explodes, killing the thousands of hogs inside. The cause of the foam is still unknown, although there are indicators that the source may be a new species of bacteria that have evolved in the barn's manure pits. Okay, well, anyway, so thankful to have just encountered Master Cho and have the opportunity to be natural farmers. So, okay, I wanted to share with you that a good friend of mine from Oahu, Glenn Martinez, from Olamana Garden, approached me and asked if I would be the Big Island president of the Farmers Union. And because it was Glenn and he's my friend, I said yes. And so now I'm taking on that position. And I'd just like to invite anybody to have some papers over here. If you'd like to sign up and become a member of the Farmers Union or find out more, you can let me know. Basically, there's the Farm Bureau, which acts as a voice for farmers. The Farm Bureau often is a vehicle for, you know, the large farming industry to have a voice with the legislature and the government. And the Farmers Union right now here in Hawaii is stepping up to be an alternative voice. So we have Glenn at the legislature talking about issues like water rights in Maui. The private biz companies are trying to take over the water and then sell it back to municipalities and to the people. The issue in Oahu about taking farmlands and changing the land zoning designation so they can have developments there. So there are a lot of issues, food safety, where it looked like they were going to try to make anybody growing a tomato in their backyard for their own consumption have to be food safety certified. Could cost you $4,000. So if you're ready to be an outlaw, or where are they going with it, we don't know. But that's the kind of stuff that the Farmers Union is looking at right now and working with. So anybody who can help us get some members up and kind of work together, please see me. If you're interested in being a board member or taking on my position, I'd surely give it away. I'm kind of nervous. I'm not really the board president kind of type. Anyways, I thought I would share the experience we've been having with the chickens. So for those of you who don't know, my name is Kaika, and I'm part of a farm, Dragon's Eye Farm, and we also have a learning center, Dragon's Eye Learning Center. So we work a lot with 4-H programs, and we have workshops that we offer, and we're very intrigued with natural farming. We've been involved for now several years. About a year ago, we won a USDA grant, and that was to build and get operational a small commercial-scale chicken farm, similar to what's described in Master Cho's book. So this is where you have a cage with 165 hens, and a good handful or two of roosters, in a 12-by-30 building. As prescribed. So we've been at it now for about a year. We had high hopes that we were going to be able to raise most of the feed for the chickens, and that's the part of the puzzle that has been our demise. But I would have to report that in terms of following Master Cho's prescription for putting the floor together and the coop together, and pretty much everything he prescribes works like a dream. We've had a wonderful time. Raising the baby chicks is just inspirational and just total fun. The kids basically battle each other to see who can take care of the baby chicks because there's no manure problems to deal with. That's the big issue. Having that handled has made being with the chickens wonderful, and I see them in their coop. We go and we watch them. They're happily doing things like Master Cho says that chickens do. Yeah?
What's the problem with raising food?
Well, when it comes down to the economics of these raising chickens, we have a stance in the farm. Everybody agrees we're not going to eat GMO food. We haven't done it. We haven't eaten commercial food for 30 years, most of us at the farm. And so we won't buy the commercial feed for the chickens. That means organic feed for chickens, if you all looked into it. It's so costly. It's so costly. So right now, that's what we do primarily, to rely on the protein source for our chickens. We buy the organic grain. And that means it costs more for me, or it would cost more probably for you, to raise chickens and feed them the organic grain than it would to just go to the store and buy an organic egg. It's cheaper to buy the egg in the store than go for organic grain. Yeah?
You haven't been able to replace the grain with the rye?
So we've done so many experiments, as people must know. We originally started years back with an aquaponic system that's fish, and we wanted to have alternative food for our fish, and we started looking into black soldier fly. And one thing led to another, and pretty soon we have Robert Olivier, who's pretty much the, you know, knows everything about the black soldier fly and develops these units so you can raise them and cultivate them. Coming here to Hawaii, and before long we're doing a project with him, you know, a demonstration. And what I learned was how to be successful in doing that. And but I can't afford to do it. So I need, the way the formula works for black soldier fly is today, once I have a colony established, let's just assume I do, I put 6 pounds of feed in, I get 1 pound of grubs out the next day. That's pretty awesome. I needed 300 pounds of food a day to feed my grubs. I'm like, whoa, where do I come up with that? Well, I don't want to use even GMO food from a restaurant left over. We don't want to support this. We don't believe that that's going to lead to success. Okay, or whatever, you know, maybe we're right or wrong about that, but so, and there's not even that much waste left over from everybody picks it up here on the Big Island. Yeah, every hog farmer and backyard, let them have it, it's theirs. So what are we going to use? Well, we went to the slaughterhouses because that's a waste that's not, that needs a home, it needs a purpose. But the problem there is you have to grind it up to make it work. We trialed and aired that one, let me tell you. You need to grind it up. So
what about fish waste? Did you put this waste on?
And it needs to be ground up. We tried that one too. It needs to be ground up. We took the fish waste and to test to see if this was true, and we put it on the ground. We ran our tractor back and forth over it in the tractor mower. And it was disgusting, but we did it and we put it in, and sure enough, it works. But the tractor mower is not the right unit, the thing to do this with. So I look online, and y'all should just for fun check out the Muffin Monster. Go to YouTube and check out the Muffin Monster. It's this little machine. They put it in line and like the sewage plants, yeah? And anything that goes through there is going to get chomped up. A shoe, a tire, a rock, you know, fish head, no problem. But you need three-phase electricity, and you need like $25,000 to buy one. So but I looked at it and I thought, I could put coconuts and get coconut core. I could straight put sugar cane through there, and this machine could just get my whole neighborhood up and going. We could just cook with this machine. So anyways, what I found was that I don't have the food stream to feed the grubs and keep the colonies fed every day. And I'd have to drive to Hilo and get the machine. So we're back to the little units, and we're experimenting now with using animal manure, horse and cow manure, because that's what we do have, a little bit of that. So we'll have smaller units going. And Robert, in the meantime, has moved to Hawaii. And he is, he's looking to really put together a wonderful project for the island using, you know, waste streams from all kinds of facilities. The type of waste that these units really are designed to handle and already proven to handle. So soon, he assures me, we will have a source of feed from the black soldier fly. But in terms of us creating that for ourselves, that kind of didn't pan out. Some of the fields of crops that we wanted to plant, well, initially we did, but then we hit drought. And I live in sunny Kapoho. So those fields, we weren't able to tend and have them flourish. So that put us on another track of selling land to, you know, drill a well. So we finally sold the land. In a couple weeks, we're going to drill the well and cleared some land to put in an agricultural project. We are we do supplement our chickens with a lot of greens, and we have been able to cut back on the ration from 140 pounds a day to our flock to, I think Mike says we're going to be down to 100 pounds next week. So we've cut out some, a pretty good portion, really, by giving them what? Lots of comfrey, lots of edible green hibiscus, lots of azolla. And right now what we're planting are, you know, huge beds of azolla. We're going to 50-foot long, five or six of them, and make Master Cho's green grass liquid fertilizer to put in the beds to feed the azolla. We're planting comfrey all over the place. Comfrey's wonderful because, you know, 8 months later you can dig it up, split it in eight pieces, you've got eight more plants to plant. And so it is working, but the bottom line is I need to sell my eggs for $7 a dozen minimum. And my friends can't even afford to buy my eggs. And once they hit this, I don't know if anyone's seen them at Island Naturals. It's like $11 a dozen to buy the eggs in Island Naturals. Yeah.
I bought it once, and your eggs, bar none, out of this.
Well, thank you.
The taste, I can taste the difference between your eggs and the other ones that are for sale at Island Naturals.
Uh-huh. Well, we do taste tests. We bought all kinds of eggs and brought them home. I'm even starting to be able to taste the difference between our two flocks. We have Araucanas that lay the Easter eggs, the green and the beautiful blue and the greens and the grays. I can taste the difference between those and the black settling eggs sometimes. Yeah, it's amazing, the difference in the quality of the eggs. So that's the hardest part for us. We're going to try to tread water and sell enough eggs just to, you know, make enough money until we can get these agricultural projects, and we're going to see if we can approach places for some help, some grants, to get these fields planted. Yeah.
Is it a cooking pie, eating green? Is it deal with green stuff?
Well, see, now Robert says no, it's too much carbon. They need, but see, he's kind of learning some new technologies with natural farming. Natural farming introduced him, you know, with the IMO, a whole different technology to establish the floor of a colony. He saw the potential there. He would traditionally, to get a colony started, take months and months of, you know, decomposing and composting down food in his unit until he gets a floor. I just started with the floor. I put soil, sprinkled some IMO, ready to go next day. Let's go. And he's like, what'd you do? How can you do that? Well, when they ran tests, what they found is a lot of the microbes were a similar strain of microbes in what he cultivated and what Master Cho starts with. So he's looking at that, and he's also looking at fermentation. What happens when you ferment grass? I'm like, that's manure, Robert, if you take these greens and ferment it. So his world is opening up to new possibilities in that way, and we'll be testing a lot of that.
Like there's a lot of greens that you can treat that the sulfur products can deal with.
That's where we're headed with it. Exactly where we're headed with it. You know, taking our silage even and yeah.
I'm not I don't need soldier blood. But I have an open pit. I've devised my own way of composting, so I don't have to carry the compost. And I dig part of my clothes bed, mm-hmm. and I put my kitchen compost in those clothes.
Right.
And in the summertime.
And then do you cover it?
No.
Oh, okay.
In the summertime, I have maggots all over the place, and I give it to people who have odor profile.
Yeah, well, like pit.
All over. Just odor profile maggots. And
maybe we'll try that.
I mean, it's an open pit.
Yeah. That can be
every place I dig. their maggots where the compost is.
If you outlast the, I think what happens until, once you get a black soldier fly colony there, then you'll see that the other house, that the house fly, the flies that carry disease vectors will leave the scene. And that's because they'll come and lay their eggs, but the soldier fly will eat them. But you have to have a colony established at first when you do your trench. If anybody does this, they'll probably experience a lot of different kinds of insects there and pesky ones and until they take over. Once it's established that you've got a...
Do your chickens do any free range stuff, or are they always in the coop?
We have them inside 100% of the time. And that's mostly because our structures, all of our barns and all of our farm structures and even our dwellings don't have walls or doors or windows. So if we leave the chickens out, they find it. They come in. Actually, we have a pigeon that just, we have birds move in. We just had a pigeon move into our house.
So that's the only reason. I mean, would you have them out sometime if you had a
I might. You know, it's just tough. With a commercial flock, it's different managing. When I've had chickens for 18 years, and I've kept them in all different types of ways. But I have to say that dealing with the commercial flock is different. Just the size of the flock, like getting them to move and from here to there, I think you could manage that well. You definitely, I think you'd want to have, you know, if you have them in the middle, let's say, have a spoke going around so you could put them in this pasture and this one and kind of rotate them around. I think that would work well. That could work very well. We have a lot of predators. The hawk, the dogs, the mongoose, the owl, you know, it would be a challenge. We might lose three birds that way. Like, we haven't been able to do Joel Salatin's chicken tractor because of that. It just wouldn't work for us. The train wouldn't allow it.
I imagine even though your chickens are in a house, they still are mobile. They're not like these other commercial farms where they're in layers and they're all packed together.
It's
different. They're healthy.
It's very different. My cousin, I had the opportunity to go home to Ohio. I haven't been home in so long. But I visited my cousin. He has 42,000 chickens. They're organic egg layers, 21,000 per building. And I looked in there and I said, you know, I used Master Cho's standard, which is, would I want to be a chicken in there? Nope. I don't care if it's organic. Don't care. They're crazy in there. And I remember what Master Cho says is, he doesn't care how many you put in a building. Go ahead, put 21,000. But you wouldn't let them all socialize together. They go insane. He says you've got to keep them 165 in a cage that's 12 by 30. They'll create their social order. And that's what I see. You can come. We give free farm tours. The first Sunday of every month, I have a business card I'll lay out at the end if y'all want to take one. You're free to come. We'll show you around. You just stand there and watch the chickens. They're just going, you know, they're happy. Some are kicking around and digging and scratching. Some are taking sun baths like chickens like to do. Others are roosting. Some are getting what? They're doing life. All the things that you list that chickens have to do, they get a chance to do. And they didn't get a chance to do that in my cousin's cage. One big house. They were just kind of looked crazy. So, and by that test, I'd still rather be the free-range chicken at my neighbor's farm out in the jungle. But if I'm to be a chicken that's not let free, you know, it's a wonderful system, I believe. Yeah.
And then no smell, no disease?
Well, we do sometimes if we stray off the path. The day we had smell and disease was the day that Senator Inouye sent an aide to come look at our coop. And so we wanted it to be really, you know, top-notch, yeah? Like your mom's coming. So we decided to, we didn't, our mower broke down and we couldn't put grass. We wanted to have a nice layer of grass clippings on the floor and we didn't have our tractor, so we ran down to the feed store and we bought some straw, yeah? And we spread it all over and it looked just fine. And the next day we came out full of smell and full of flies. Because the straw from the store was so long, he says 3-inch clippings, yeah? 3-inch straw, rice straw cut. Well, these were long and we had it layered like this and the birds couldn't scratch it up. They couldn't scratch. And so they laid their manure, the IMO didn't get to it, they didn't scratch it down, and it just drew flies and smelled. So there was the senator's aide, and we're going, see, Master Cho is right. If you just deviate, you blow it, you know? We hadn't had a fly or a smell for months until that day.
When did you buy your straw?
Just the regular straw from Dell's and Miranda's. I don't remember. It was too far ago. Maybe
I buy a straw from the Dell.
Yeah.
When my chicken coops get wet, you know, on the side, when I buy their straw and I put it in, and it, you know, grabs the moisture, and
yeah,
it will smell right away. That's why I asked where your straw came from.
Yeah, maybe it was wherever we got it. It was too. We, you know, we didn't do more than four. We did 4 inches, but it was too long, and they couldn't scratch. We looked in there, and maybe it was just packed too tightly, and I didn't look. Yeah, free it up enough. But you can mess up. You know, we've messed up a few times, and we learn every time. Oh, he's right. Don't skip that step. So, well, that's any more questions? Yeah.
Your feed that you get to your chicken is Master Cho's formula?
We do. We ferment the grains every night, and we
with
IMO4. If we can, we give them a carbohydrate. Right now I have a farmer that I trade. I take him milk and eggs and, you know, some wild pork meat or whatever we have at the farm, and I trade him for bananas. Kind of a low season right now, so our chickens, you know, we're scavenging for jackfruits and ulu, but we give them as much carbs as we can, and we spend a lot of time picking greens. We like to put the greens through a chipper shredder and then pack it, make silage by packing them into 5-gallon buckets and putting the lid on, and then I have a whole wall of maybe 90 buckets, and every day we feed them, like, I think it's 3 or 4 buckets of silage, and it's hot. We'd like to mix that with the green, with the grain, and ferment it all overnight. And yeah, it really does make a difference. And we're hoping we can just keep increasing. Well, that's the test. And we're hoping maybe we can get another grant to help us along the way, test out. You know, people say, azolla is great. You can feed your chickens. Water hyacinths is great. You can feed your chickens. All these, but they don't tell you how much and what combination work for the health of a bird. So that's what we like to keep researching.
What do you use for grit?
For grit, just cinders. I hope that's good enough.
What people
say? Cinders. Yeah.
What percentage eggs do you have? Because in Korea they were saying 90%, but they keep their birds only for a year.
Well, Master Cho suggests that you of course, in a large-scale commercial industry, they oftentimes put a light on and have the chickens just lay, you know, a couple a day until 6 months later they're Wendy's, you know, chicken McNugget or whatever. But Master Cho says you should strive for 70%. And he says if... I've always heard him say 70.
75%?
Yeah, then you prolong the same period 3 years.
Oh, but wasn't he selling it after a year?
Oh, no.
I thought they were
selling
that.
That's the wrong information. I don't know who is saying it, but
when we went to the tour at that farm, that's what they were saying, 90%.
Oh, this was in Korea?
Yeah, in Korea.
Uh-huh.
And they were selling the chicken after a year of laying, selling them for a good price.
Well, maybe they had an offer that made it worth their while. But I know after, it's a big investment to raise a chicken. Ours didn't lay until the 6 months. So, we had to feed them all that time. You know, I was having to take a second job, and I wasn't even buying food for my family, you know, but I had to go work to buy chicken feed. So finally they started laying in the 6 months. And then now I have 3 years to save up enough money to do it again. I'm not going to make it unless our feed.
1 year of rain, and then they sold the chickens for 8 years.
Oh, they sold them as egg layers. Well, they would have gotten the top dollar. I've looked at that. I thought maybe that's the way it has to go. For raising
every year, paper. They were raising a whole new batch, so that their egg layers were just, you know, beginning first year.
Well, that'd be good, but Master Chuck, they were selling them as natural farming chickens. He'd want them to stick to 70% because he says it economically it will work out to your benefit to have their laying period extend at a pretty high level than to just like peak off and then fall dramatically. I haven't tested it out, but I've tested out so many other things and found him to be right that I stick by that one very carefully.
Would you get 70%?
That's what we, yep. And if you get more, it says cut back their feed. The problem we had in raising the chickens was I couldn't figure out how much to feed them at different stages of their development. And I kept trying to find sources. And at one point, I used his rule of thumb, which is 45 minutes after you feed them, you should come and find nothing left, or very little feed left. And that's the right amount. So I tested it. But then a couple chickens died, and I was wondering why. And my daughter comes in. And I'm the feed person. I got to get to the next thing, you know. And she comes in, she picks them up. She's like, they're starving, Kaika. You're not giving them enough food. I'm like, oh, how embarrassing. Oh, how awful. How terrible. So once we started upping the rations, so that rule of thumb doesn't necessarily always work. And you should really pick up your chickens, and you can cheat. My daughter taught me how to feel and see how they're developing. And I'm like, oh. Oh, this is embarrassing, and I'll tell this story, okay. But he says, you know, I was smelling the water. I did a lot of things. He says, if you're going to put a chicken inside, you better put your nose down to the water and, you know, smell the floor and make yourself a chicken. But I hadn't taken the time to really, you know, be with one of the chickens. They're so friendly.
So when did you come up to your measurements, or did you come up with some formulation of how much feed that each chicken?
Well, we give them, I believe it's about 5.5 or 6 ounces of grain a day. And I was thinking, when I originally got into this, that, okay, chickens take 6 ounces of grain a day. I'll be able to cut that down to 2 ounces of grain, 2 ounces of carbs, 2 ounces of grass. But then I'm like, no, we have to feed him the 6 ounces of grain plus the grass, the carbs. Like, this is more money and time and expense than what the other people do. It's just they're, you know, put in the dry feed. But now that we've been, you know, now we're starting to, as we're having more supply of these high protein greens, we're actually starting to be able to decrease the grain. So, like I said, I don't know where it's going to end because no one, believe me, if someone had the formula, I'd just plug in and use it. But we're just going to see what it takes for, you know. The edible hibiscus is wonderful. I had a natural farming chickens workshop last weekend, and I sent home starts of everything, you know, if they were available. You could get some comfrey or some edible green hibiscus and azolla. I think those are going to be great plants to grow. And the hyacinths, well, we haven't had so much success with growing the moringa. Every time we planted a bunch and then the drought came and they all died. And we did the stick culture and we just battled drought. Now we just figured we're wasting our time planting things and then coming up against drought and having them die and not having water available to feed them. So we just kind of stopped and decided to get the well or just do something else to make a livelihood. So?
But in this sense, does the bus go by your farm?
The bus comes pretty close. It comes within a couple of miles. It goes to a place called Four Corners.
Four Corners.
Four Corners. And if you were coming, I would certainly, we would come pick you up. I don't know if it comes, I don't know if it comes on Sunday, though.
No, I don't think it does. It doesn't come on Sunday. And not all buses go all the way up. The whole bus.
Somebody else here will be coming with you. And they'll bring you.
That's an idea.
Of course.
I'd love to see you.
Of course. You're definitely welcome. So, well, that's what I had. And just afterwards, if anyone, you know, I'm going to stick around and just, I'll be here and eating some food. And I have the Farmers Union papers, and I have business cards for our farm. You can come to browse our website, come to the tour, come to a workshop or two. I really appreciate your time and your interest and everybody's support. I did bring some eggs tonight. I have 16 dozen of eggs, and I have them for $5 tonight. So anybody who would like to go home with some eggs, you all are inspiration. So we'll have some eggs for sale. Thank you, Drake, and thanks to everybody.
I wanted to talk about the Let's Grow Heroes Festival that we had. This, it was pretty cool. This past Saturday, I went down at 9 o'clock, and about 5 other people showed up, and we harvested that triangle across KTA. And out of there, we got, there were those mounds of kalo, and each one I had planted 3 huli in them. And those 3 huli, there were about 7 pounds each of those. And then the rest, so there was also the other huli around that had, or the other oha that had more. So we got at least like 20 pounds per mound. And there were nine mounds, I think. So out of that small amount of area, we got a fair amount, almost 200 pounds of taro. And then we dug up a bunch of sweet potatoes, and like just downtown Hilo, natural farming in that soil, like sweet potatoes were huge. There's still more down there, so if you want to go dig some up. We didn't get them all yet, but we got a bunch of sweet potatoes as well. And then Rick Kobayashi cooked them up, the kalo and the sweet potato, at Cafe 100. And then we brought it back downtown, and within 100 feet of the garden, we were serving it up to people. And we had plenty of food. Also, Nong Mai Thai Kitchen, we had some farmers donate some eggplant and greens for the stir fry, and they made like this curry stir fry thing. That put that over the sweet potato with the taro. So good. So it was really successful. And then we had a bunch of people, like we shut down the street and we had a plant sale there to raise money for Let's Grow Hilo. We're looking to kind of get some tools for the group, so we don't have to keep borrowing them from the UH. And I believe that went pretty successful. I didn't get a final report on that, but live music, good food down there. And so that's been happening, and we're going to continue doing the Let's Grow Hilo on the last Sunday of the month as a community work day down there, but more planting and more of that going on. Yes, when I was down there with Sam, we were digging it up, and she's been doing a lot of gardening, and she was just amazed at how much the natural farming yielded. Like, you know, didn't really do too much like soil amendment or anything. Just put the IMO down, a little bit of the biochar and some of the charred fish, and that, you know, had great results. So that was really good. And you went to taste the kalo, right?
The kalo.
Yeah, you want to talk about that?
Oh, yeah. Sure.
Good, right?
Yeah.
That was really awesome. In Kohala, there's a KIC responded, they sponsored the Taste of Kahlo. Actually, it's all natural farming raised Kahlo. And then there's 11 different groups, you know, two or three. They were the chefs that they were cooking with a natural farming Kahlo with all these different vegetables on the table. We grab and then like a iron chef. So there's a mayor came and some senators and, you know, natural farming group. And also, some of the majority of people who was setting up the booth, so lots of my students were there, and it's all natural farming product they came up with. The couple, they even create their own spray bottle for the plants, and then I think they are doing really, really good. Also, they are teaching children with the natural farming, and then they have all these different cakey plants, and then they're selling that. And then myself, I had about 20,000 of eggs. It sold out. Boom! It's a natural farming egg, and then some books, and then anyway, it's just they wanted to make a sustainable Hawaii. In Kohala, they at least 50% of food produced from that Kohala area by 2018. And you can already see the progress because they plant the Kahlo last July and they are starting to harvest already. So it's really just you put a little time aside and make your input, natural farming input. I don't know how many people you learned the natural farming here, but it really works. And it's 100% natural. And the people just enjoy so much. It's just so safe. Yeah. And the environmentally, everything is much better and healing. Thank you.
So by raising your hand, if you raise it all this way, you understand fermented plant juice a lot. If you raise it about here, you know, just getting into it. So can everyone raise their hand to the appropriate level? Wait, keep your hands up. I wasn't done looking. I gotta get everyone. Okay, cool. So who had their hand the lowest?
Okay. I have not done it.
Okay, well, you can come up here and be my helper then. So I want to go and do a little fermented plant juice. Is there anything else before? Any other things like on that? All right, we're doing this then. Cool. So fermented plant juice is a great thing to get quick, easy, simple recipe that someone who has never made it before can make it this time, and it's going to turn out perfect, guaranteed. The materials you need to make it are pretty simple. They are a bowl, a jar, some brown sugar, and plant material. And today I have the plant material that's the comfrey plant.
Mm-hmm.
And I harvested this actually this morning. And it's best to harvest things that you want to ferment in the early morning because there's the most nutrients in it at that time. Not necessarily the most nutrients, but the most growing enzymes in there in the morning. Because the plants actually do their growing at night. And in the morning time, before the UV light hits them, they have all that same, the auxins and the different hormones and enzymes that are making the plant grow are still in the tips. And so if you harvest it then when you ferment it, you have the most chance to get those beneficial parts into your liquid. And so, as you see, I just gathered about a half bucket worth. This is probably too much for what we're doing here, but it's always good to have more than less. All right. So, materials are easy. So now, Keahi and I are going to go through the process of this, which, as you can see, I gathered the leaf matter, but I didn't wash it. Still has kind of some grass on it from being thrown on there. It's important that you don't wash it, because on the leaf matter here, there's a bunch of yeast and other microorganisms that are naturally on the plant leaf, and that's what's going to do our fermentation through this process. So these unwashed leaves, what we do is take them like this. So you want to grab some of these? And what I do is I shred it so that I'm not pulverizing it, but I'm making them about handful size here and put them in the bowl. And a little bit smaller than that. So
two, three?
Yeah, three. Bunch. So if you have a big leaf matter like this, it's a little bit harder to mix. So we make it real small like this here. And mix that into our bowl here. And this is plenty for right this time. So shred a little bit like this here. And then we're going to mix in sugar into this. And so for the sugar, the rule of thumb is, what is the rule of thumb? Who knows the rule of thumb for this? Equal parts. Equal parts by weight. And so if you want to measure it on your own, do that. But you see how much is in here. It's going to require, actually I'm going to take a little bit out so it's a little bit easier to mix here. Oh, yay much, which this is a half cup of sugar. I'll mix in here. And now that you got the sugar on, what you want to do is loamy it. So you know, yeah, exactly. And so what you're doing here is, and feel free to get in there and, yeah. What she's doing is she's mixing the sugar against the cell walls. So she's trying to coat the leaves with the sugar that we just added. And when you get the brown sugar directly against plant material, it creates osmotic pressure, which then pulls the water through the cell wall into this stuff here. And so if you see when she started, it was dry. But watch, mm-hmm. The more she works this, which, give her a minute.
I think I can feel it.
It'll start to get moist. And this liquid that's coming out is actually from the coming across the cell wall. And so you don't want to add any additional water, and the liquid will just come out of there.
It's shrinking.
Yeah, it's also shrinking as well. You're doing just perfect. Yeah. And in the recipe book, it says to layer it, where you just put the sugar and then layer leaf and then layer. And it doesn't get this same osmotic reaction coming out and happening as if you do in loamy it. And even a little bit more than that. Yeah, yeah. And you see it's starting to get moist there. And as she's working it, you see all the sugar that I added? Can everyone see this? If you want to get up and come up here, it's cool. But you'll see that the sugar is now getting stuck to the leaves, and there's not a bunch of sugar sitting at the bottom. It's all just going onto the leaf matter. You want to come on the back side? Yeah, perfect. Right on. And if you know you're going to add a little bit more sugar in this case, because it's not quite, could use a little bit more. Work that in. Hopefully I have enough sugar.
Just disintegrate.
But yeah, see all this liquid that's now coming out of this. When you start to make your fermented plant juice, you want it to get this liquidy. And so once this happens and the liquid starts to come across, you've created that osmotic pressure now.
Wow.
What's that? Yeah. And so now that it's liquidy, what we want to do at this point is pack it into this jar.
Okay. Any way?
Yeah, all of it.
It has a slight scent, and the scent is pleasing. Thank you.
And I use wide mouth jars because it's easy to get my hand in there to pack it down. If you want to pack it so you get all the air out, pack it down from the bottom there.
Squishy.
And so the liquid, you can see, I mean, it's obviously on my hand there a little bit, but the liquid that's here is like, it's full of the nutrients, but they're not water soluble yet. So they're unavailable to your plant at this stage. So even though right now I'm getting liquid off, it's not a fermented plant juice yet, because this liquid, the microorganisms need to process it so then it becomes a plant available form and it's water soluble again. And that's why we ferment it after this. And so I'm going to make one more of these here because you want the jar to be about 2/3 full. The reason for that is that everything in life that's living, you'll find kind of respects the relationship of 2/3. It's the golden ratio, which isn't exactly 2/3, but 2/3 approximates it pretty closely. And so the easiest way to ask yourself if you're at 2/3 is you say, is it more than half? If you can say yes, and is it less than 3/4? And if you can say yes, you're pretty close to 2/3. That's the rule I use, because almost otherwise I'm always at 3/4, and I'm just thinking, yeah, it's 2/3, right? So let me see if I can get more sugar out of my bag.
Wait, don't you do the same where you can fill it to the top and then let it settle down?
I actually, because I'm packing the stuff in there, I don't. Because I'm packing all the air out. If you were to just fill it to the top and let it settle, you'd have to put like a weight on it.
I have a question. What happens if you have some insects in your plants and you put them in here?
They'll ferment. And so we added in so far a cup of sugar, and that's probably all it's going to take for this. Add a little bit. Yeah. Useless at your feet, right? And so if you're interested in what to ferment, I chose comfrey here. I like comfrey because it has allotonin in it, which is an incredibly healing substance. And comfrey's helped me out a few times with healing. And so I like to add that because it's a very, like, you know, if you put a bunch of healing things onto your plants, anytime, you know, I can use that. Other plants that I like to ferment a lot are honohono grass, because it just has a lot of vitality. And that one, when you put it onto your other plants, just encourages them to grow a little bit quicker. Those same enzymes and hormones that are in there. And that rule of you want to look for what attributes a plant has. So if it's growing real fast, or it has, you know, a really good root system, if you take that plant and ferment it, you're going to take all the complete enzymes and everything that was making that plant express those characteristics, and you can sort of translate it over to your plant. So is that clear?
Yes. Which one is the whole world?
Honohonograph is also called like Wandering Jew. Yeah, it goes, it's viney looking, has little leaves.
Is it really? A little bit more.
Trees, anything that's woody, you're going to have a little bit harder of a time.
I mean, just the shoots, when you cut it down, you get lots of suckers that come out. It's really tender stuff, and it's really vigorous stuff.
Yeah, that's, it's probably borrowing energy from the other trees, though, right? I would try that. Anything that's woody, it's going to be a little bit harder. If you are doing, like, see the liquid, and you know it's ready when it's getting the liquid, right? So that she asked me, is it ready? And you can tell, because look, yeah, you see that liquid coming out of there?
Yes.
So it's ready to be packed into this jar. And if you're doing something that's woody and it's not as much liquid as this comfrey, you can add a little bit of salt. So of your sugar that you're adding, make no more than 10% of it salt. And that will help to draw more, it will create more osmotic pressure in a drier type of thing.
I just worked as an advantage
because
it's a vigorous plant.
All
right. I've heard Matthew talk about processed from orange tree.
Yeah.
And I've heard him talk about applying that to like a broccoli plant. And then you'll get all kinds of
seeds
coming off the flower, off the broccoli.
Why do you need, is that
a
foliar application?
That's what I am.
Man, I
want to
get this up to 2/3,
but
I don't have enough sugar.
Yeah, suckers.
Well, we can
say it's in process.
Okay. So yeah, this one's in the process because I don't have enough sugar to do one more of these deals. But so this to fill this quart jar, it would take a cup and a half of sugar to do. So from this matter here, if you see the way I add the sugar, I don't weigh it out. I add it gradually to it. I happen to know that this is roughly that amount. Like, to do a jar this size, takes about 4 cups of sugar, just slightly less than 4 cups. And it also depends on the material you're fermenting. Some materials, like, it's that osmotic pressure, and you really want to just coat your material and work it in there so that you're loaming it. You saw the way she was kind of working the material. It wasn't just stirring it. She was actually with her hands, like, working the sugar in, and that's why there's so much liquid that already you can see that liquid coming out of there. And but if not ready yet, you can't use that. You have to wait for it to ferment.
How long?
So the fermentation process with this, here in Hawaii, it's between 3 and 5 days. If you're uncertain, wait 5 days.
Mm-hmm.
And then you can pour off the liquid and keep the solids, or no, excuse me, discard the solids, keep the liquid.
Yes.
And what I'll typically do is a little strainer, turn it upside down, mm-hmm. and let the solids sit there, and you'll get a bunch more that'll leak out of that at the, it holds an amazing amount of liquid. But it renders about a quarter of the material into liquid. And the excess material can compost it.
And the application?
Okay, so the application. Last month I was talking about the soil foundation. So in that soil foundation recipe, we used it. And its purpose is that it supplies the food to the system. There's a, if you want to rinse your hands,
yeah.
There's a spot right in there. Yeah. Cool. Thank you so much, Kathy.
Oh, you're welcome.
Yeah, all right.
My first attempt
easy,
at natural
right?
farming.
Easy. Yeah.
Okay.
Easy. So for the use, it really acts as kind of the food in the system. And when I'm talking about that you can take it from this plant and translate those characteristics over, what I'm specifically talking about there is like a foliar application and a foliar feed. And you want a foliar feed between a dilution of 1 to 500 or 1 to 1,000, depending on the health of your plants. If they're really healthy, you can go with a 1 to 500 but it's somewhere in that range. If they're healthier, you can go like 1 to 500. If you're starting things off, like more like 1 to 1,000. So 1,000 parts of water to one part of this. And the comfrey is really easy to harvest and grab, but typically you want to grab the growing tips of your plant to harvest. And so sometimes when you do that, it can be tedious to go out and grab the growing tips of each plant. So I really recommend getting together with a few people and making fermented plant juice together, because when you get something like this and you get this much fermented plant juice in here, this can be diluted 500 times. So in essence, I've made almost, you know, I don't know, a quart. So I made a bunch with just this. And so even though it's small volumes and it may be a lot of work, it's really, it's easy and it's really powerful stuff.
Is there a particular time growth rate the plant is best for?
Yeah, the fermented plant juice really works well in the early stages of the plant, and up until it, right before it begins flowering. It's primarily used for like growth, like think like food. When you need food, anytime you need food, this is like the plant food. It's also the microorganism food. It provides that to the system.
So like you feed that to bananas before they start putting off flowers, right?
Yeah, as it's growing up, yeah. It's a great thing for the bananas. They'll love it. And the banana, you can take the small banana cakeys, like the small suckers, and ferment those. Like you're asking about the Vi-V, but I know with the banana little guys, that makes an excellent thing to ferment. And then also with the banana, I've made a similar to this, I've taken the banana flour, you know, it hangs off the rack, and made a ferment out of that. And then that helps during more of the flowering stage, crossover period, because it kind of triggers the plant. Like because this came from the growing tips, when you spray it on a plant, no matter where you hit it, it's going to want to go back to the growing tips. And so if you get it from the flower, it's going to want to go back to the flower. So wherever you spray it, kind of as it travels to that area, it brings life and nutrition with it.
Do you spray late in the day or early in the morning?
This is best to spray in the evening, and like same with your IMO. And the smaller particle size, the better. With this, like the misting tip onto there, and then your plant will absorb it a lot better. If you really wanted to, once a week, but you kind of got to open the feedback loop up of how are my plants doing, what do they feel like. If you just throw food at them all the time, it's not necessarily the best. But if they look like they're hungry or they want this, that's a good time. So, and like Eric was saying, he did some of that soil foundation. You use some fermented plant juice in it? Yeah, and it kind of like invigorated the system, and you can kind of, within 3 days, see the difference. So you should have pretty immediate feedback with this. Also, when you spray it on the leaves, there's photosynthetic bacteria that are on the leaves already. And when you spray this, they get to eat, and so your plant will be creating more photosynthesis because those microbes are able to assist and kind of stimulate that process.
What is your estimate on how much that feed costs?
How much did it cost to make this?
No.
Maybe $2 to make.
How many doses?
If it was a full half, the full half gallon cost me about $3 or so to make, and the full half gallon, I mean, it'll make 250 gallons of spray, and the dilution, and the, so acre-wise, be 25 acres? So for $3, can make enough to do 25 acres. So. Yeah, that's a good calculation there. Yeah.
And that's 1 gallon?
Oh, this would be a half gallon.
Half gallon.
Of the total liquid, like,
right,
of the pour-off. So to get this half gallon, I actually did it in a 5 gallon bucket, and I made almost a gallon out of a 5 gallon bucket. Because it wasn't, you know, it wasn't full. But
how much sugar did that take for the 5 gallon bucket worth estimated?
It takes about 4 pounds of sugar. So, yeah. Before you do the fermentation, you want to cover it. And I just took a T-shirt here. It's an old T-shirt that I had, and then I took the ring. So there's no metal piece on this jar. It's just a breathable lid. You can use paper or anything, but I find T-shirts to work pretty well for me.
Using the solution, the number 2 and number 3 alternately on different weeks. And I have, like, I didn't notice it until the sunlight was behind because we looked great and deep color and beautiful, but, you know, I'm growing the tropical flowers, not gardening. And the tropical flowers look wonderful, foliage-wise, everything until the sun went behind them. And it looks like welding burns, like little holes, sprinkles.
Like a.
That I could see sunlight through.
So like a bug eating it?
I don't know. That's, you know, someone else mentioned.
Like grasshoppers.
Oh, I don't know. Are you ready to come to KL again? Come out for a look.
I don't, I've never, using fermented plant juice as just like a sole ingredient by itself, I've never seen it cause any burning or anything like that, especially at the 1 to 500, which is an ounce into 4 gallons.
And I'm not using it in the... the sunlight. I'm using it in the late evening. So I don't know.
Sounds like insects to me.
Rain at the same time. I wonder if possibly it was the fog in the rain. But I don't know.
Would you ever use that alone, or would you always use it in conjunction with, say, IMO1 and the other concoctions that you think of?
I like to go, like, when I've been introducing people to natural farming, I've been using this recipe because it can be used alone and you get results by itself. But natural farming itself always starts with a soil foundation. And so if you're just using this and you're not dealing with building a soil foundation, you're not going to get the full benefit. And so there's a lot of different ways to combine different ingredients to get different outcomes.
So you'd use that along on the foliar, but if you were doing a soil drench, you would always use other things with that.
Yeah.
Is that what you think?
Yeah. And also, I mean, it depends what you have on hand, too. Knowing what each of the components does enables you to be really diligent about which parts you're including and which parts you're changing your dilution ratio. and this here acts as the food. So anytime if you look at your system and you think, oh, it's hungry, this is a really good place to kind of add a little bit of food to the system. And one time not to use it is when you have a bunch of insects, like you have an insect problem, that's when you shouldn't use this, because the sugar in here will attract more insects. But that's the only time.
Does the fermentation use the sugar up?
No.
You don't have liquid in it.
Yeah, and this ferment isn't necessarily a lactic acid fermentation, which a lot of fermentations, like fermented foods, tend to be. The liquid, when I first, you can see this like really dark liquid in there, it will change color. This is comfrey here, but you can see just like the character of it, it's different. Like this is kind of like glossy looking. If you want to come up and check it out, you can. And this is a complete fermentation here. And one thing I've noticed actually is that when I'm done with my ferment and after I've poured the liquid into here and gotten rid of the solids, is if I take an extra bit of sugar, and so for instance, this thing was a full jar when I poured it off. I added in about 3/4 cup of sugar into this afterward. And that is to arrest the fermentation. So, because I don't want it to continually do its thing and it'll turn into more vinegar. I found rather quickly if I don't add extra sugar in after the ferment is complete. And if I'm going to do any type of long-term storage or anything, I'll add a little extra sugar into it. And it really helps with the shelf life and to maintain the integrity of your good, high-quality ferment. Out of direct sunlight and stored in a nice cool area, it can last years. With improper storage, though, it can go off pretty quickly. Store it with a breathable lid on it. Try not to cut it off. If you do seal it, it can explode, so be careful. Be very careful. Actually, at the Hilo Harvest Fest, someone had some type of ferment something and in this jar, and it exploded. It was really kind of scary. I mean, shards of glass shot everywhere.
If you know you're going to use it right away, you don't add sugar, you just use it.
Yeah. It, that extra storage helps arrest the fermentation. It helps the storage process. Yes.
When you say you discard the greens or the vegetation, it still contains sugar, doesn't it?
Yeah.
How do you dispose of it? Because if you put that in the garden, it really attracts ants.
The
sugar.
You could rinse it.
That's what I do. I rinse it, and then I have a chicken that I give to the chicken or put it in a compost pile. You just rinse it. And they use that water to your chicken's drinking water.
Yeah, take that water you rinsed it with and then spread that around too. Yeah, when I say discard, I mean like,
so much sugar.
Okay, go.
I have a question for you with your plants that have the spots on the leaves. And I thought one thing that we noticed, we have that show up. And then at the last training, it was clarified about what's best if you can mist your plants. The finer the spray, the better. And mist them from all sides. And I think at one point, we were doing more of a drench, like, okay, they're dripping, got it. No. as too much. And so maybe, I don't know what type of sprayer you were using, but maybe a globule or like kind of stuck on there, maybe that could cause spotting. If we try to go for more of a mix, I think
so is that everyone? Any more questions on ferments or anything?
Besides the plant needing water, if you see the plant is droopy, what would tell you that the plant is hungry?
Yeah.
Observe the plant.
Yeah, observation. If you're unsure, feed it with this, and then see what it looks like when it's received food, and when it's like doing good, and then you'll see the difference between one that's hungry. Like when I think of ones that are hungry, I just think they get kind of like more spindly, and they're not as full as they could be. Also, you know, it just slows down. I mean, plants go through life, you know, just like humans. There's different stages that you're, you know, at. But when it starts slowing down, be more stunted, this will help to invigorate it.
Can you use that foliar spray? Can you use some kind of wetting agent, something in there to stick to the plant, or just spray it straight on?
No, yeah, just spray it straight on. You don't want this to, it'll stick as much as it does.
And like Kaika said, don't just spray on the side, you need to spray on the
side. Yeah, Master Cho is saying that, you know, if you have a sprayer and you're spraying, you hit it from the bottom up,
yeah.
And you just, you know, and so that your whole plant is then like covered in the mist. Has everyone tasted fermented plant juice? Because if you made it, you should probably taste it, because how do you know if your stuff is still good? The way you determine that is you taste it. And if you don't like it, then don't put it on your plants. But if you do like it, then it's good. Unless you're picky. But if anyone wants, I got this here. I got some small little cups. But it does wonders for human health, too. It's a good thing, like, instead of serving kids high fructose corn syrup, you can just pour a little bit of this into water, and just like how they make soda and it's concentrate diluted with water, you can do that same thing here. And if you make a ferment out of good things, like I made it out of watermelon tips, that one was a really good taste. I've also had the one made from purslane. That's another really good tasting one. And I made it from tomatoes, and that one wasn't... but the comfrey I like. Comfrey also, if you do, it has the allotonin in it, which is another really good healing thing. If you do make one out of that, it's probably pretty healthy to drink. I wouldn't drink too much of this stuff, though, if you are going to drink it, because it's really concentrated. It's like it's the essence of the plant. If you take too much of anything, is, you know, too much.
Don't take any more than what you can get, eat the plant, you know. So if you can eat a plate full of the plant, how much of a plate full of the plant make and plant juice, that's probably what you should drink.
I like it a little bit stronger than that, but yeah. But yeah, that's a good metric there. So does that help you guys with fermented plant juice? Because, you know, I thought one of the most important things was how that it was loamy here, and that now it has that pressure pulling the liquid out, and I really wanted to show and share that, and that's when Mike told me he'd never made it before, I was like, oh, come on. Any other questions on that?
It's not on that, but when you're cooking the taro, the corn here, do you have to boil it and throw the water away and then because of some tannic acid or something, and boil it a second time with no water?
I've heard that, but that's not the way I cook my taro. I typically steam it.
And the leaves, can you just steam the leaves with just the first water that you use? You don't have to steam them twice?
Yeah, I wouldn't think so. I mean, the leaf more than the corm puts a dark color in the water if you're steaming it. The corm tends to not as much. I'm not an authority on that in terms of the second time with the water. I know with the leaf, make sure you cook it a lot. Otherwise it has the oxalic acid, which kind of makes your throat swell up. But you'll know the first bite if you didn't cook it well enough. And my rule of thumb with kalo is cook it once, cook it again. The more you cook it, there's certain varieties you can overcook, but majority you can't overcook. And the more you cook it, the more it breaks down the crystal that makes your throat swell.
Can I?
Yes, please. I'm going to wash my hands.
Okay.
Yes.
We put a donation basket there because Jennifer has supported us for a year and a half or so, and she has provided us with the plates, the napkins, and things like that. So maybe we can be self-supporting and putting a dollar or something like that every once in a while, and help to do that. Thank you.
I have a friend that is in jail. I can bring because they don't put it in my money. I don't bring it around if somebody's going to buy it. But I am selling it for $10 through the end of this month.
I'm looking for part-time work. I live in Chino. And as you see, I'm very, new to this, but if you want to hire me for part-time work, I'm not that strong, but I can be determined.
Yeah, today I brought some olive oil and a mirror on. I brought some oil chain. You want to buy a LAB? A LAB? What I'm talking about? Calcium? That's the move. So, whatever you have, it's the move. And then I will take it to my bank.
Dr. Fox, he's in Korea. Oh, really?
He's
in Korea.
He's in Korea. He's in Korea. He's in Korea. He's in Korea. He's in Korea. He's in Korea. He's in Korea. He's in Korea. He's in Korea. He's in Korea. He's in Korea. He's in Korea. He's in Korea. He's in Korea. He's in Korea. He's in Korea. He's in Korea. He's in Korea. He's in Korea. He's in Korea. He's in Korea. He's in Korea. He's in Korea. He's in Korea. He's in Korea. He's in Korea. He's in Korea. He's in Korea. He's in Korea. He's in Korea. He's in Korea. He's in Korea. He's in Korea. He's in Korea. He's in Korea. He's in Korea. He's in Korea. He's in Korea. He's in Korea. He's in Korea. He's in Korea. He's in Korea. He's in Korea. He's in Korea. He's in Korea. He's in Korea. He's in Korea. He's in Korea. He's in Korea. He's